This podcast is a production of Crosspoint Church. Visit us online at crosspointwithane.org.
Well, good morning. I'm glad to see you all. And you're equally glad to see me. That's incredibly rude. You should know that. Now, if you guys look behind you right now, there's some people doing the YMCA dance. They're doing this. But I think that means scoot in, because we have lots of people standing back there. So if you guys could scoot into the middle and create some space on the edges, that'd be good. I was ready to bust into some village people. Got it. All right. So, yeah, go ahead and do the shuffle. Yes, there is plenty of room in the front, the holy seats. People are scared they'll get picked on. All right, so, yeah, good. Thanks for doing that. As we do every week, the ushers will be coming forward and allowing us to continue to worship God, to trust Him in tangible ways. You know, there's a lot of talking and singing. That's easy. But to say, God, I'm going to partner with my resources, that's a whole other thing. So we pray that you can give in a spirit of trust and worship as they come forward. And as they're doing that, we're going to multitask. I think we've decided we're going to call these bulletin programs, all right? And on the inside, to draw your attention to a couple things, one of the things, KidSpace is tonight, and that's from 4 to 6, and if you have, you know, young children that you want to bring and sing and have a great time and come away with some tools just to help sit down with your kids and talk about deep things, that's a really, really fun time. The approach is this coming Friday, from 6 to midnight. And what we do is we take this room and we completely change the environment, and we make it this environment where you can come in and kind of go to these different stations, and you can spend as much time within that 6 hours as you want to. Our goal, our hope, is that you would walk out of this place next Friday with a renewed sense, or perhaps the first time ever sense, that, wow, God is crazy about me. God loves me. That's our goal. That's what the whole thing is for. So we hope that you can come to the approach this Friday between 6 and midnight, and stay as long as you want to. Should be a cool thing. All right? All right. Well, we are going to get started this morning on week 3 of this series, 316. And before I do that, what I want to tell you is about a year and a half ago, I decided that I wanted to make not some salsa, but the salsa. I had this really weird moment. I told my wife, Christy, I said, I just think it would be cool to be known as being the guy that makes really good salsa. She looks at me like wives do when husbands say stupid things like that, you know. Like, okay, honey. So I took it upon myself to make some salsa, and I'm going to go public with my recipe today. Some of you have never taken a note before, but today's the day. You might want to jot this down. All right. Actually, I won't give you the amounts because the amounts vary every time that I make it. And I want to give credit to a teaching pastor at Mars Hill, Rob Bell, for inspiring me to use one of my favorite foods as a teaching tool, which I've been meditating on and researching all week to be right before the Lord and you all week long. All right, so here's how it goes. I've got a little bit left over from first hour, but it's basically pretty simple. You got to have Roma tomatoes, fresh Roma tomatoes. All right, let me put them in here. And you know what? I think I can fit all those. And then petite diced, because freshness is not that important to me. So straight from the can. Got a little bit of garlic in there, soups it up. Some jalapenos. Some of you know these as jalapenos. All right. A little bit of garlic. Already put that in there. Some green chilies. All right. Very important. Add that little twang. Now, some of you will be caught off guard by this, but put a little bit of lime in there. Pretty key. Squeeze it. Don't put it in there. All right. That would be a unique salsa. I did it again. First hour, I realized as I'm up here, I didn't bring a paper towel, and I'm not requesting one, but that's just bad foresight. So, a little bit of onion. I've already got some onion in there, but some white onion. Let me get this off here. All right. Get that in there. Now, I over-peppered it last hour, but you got to have some of this. I pretty much put this in everything I consume. This is Cholula, and as you can see, just a little bit. Nice and spicy. Now, you can use fresh cilantro, but I'm done. You know what I mean? It's that simple. So you can use that Let's see what else. Oh, and a little bit of sugar. A little something for the kids. All right. Now, last hour, this was the first time I had ever used this. And it went fairly well. It's a Tupperware brand salsa maker. So if you're in the market, I highly recommend. Okay, there we go. All right. A couple of turns. You can hear it go to soup pretty quick. I'm sure it makes other things, but this in my house would be called a salsa maker. All right. Get that off there. Oh, yes. Now, blue corn chips, very important. And Don, if you could turn up my microphone, because they should hear me enjoy this. All right. Oh, yes. Oh, wow. Does anybody want to ruin their breath early in the morning? Anybody? Raise your hand. You want some salsa? I'm going to keep asking. All right, over here. All right. All right, down here in the front. That'd be kind of a cool tradition. As we do every week, the usher is going to come forward and provide your salsa. That's all right. All right. You're way too tactful about it. You just dive in. That's how we handle that. All right. So it's pretty good stuff. It's better when it sits and ferments a little bit. If I were to ask you all words that you would describe used to describe that salsa, hopefully you'd say positive things in front of all these people. But you might say, it's spicy. It's fresh. It's life-changing. You might say some things like that. One of the things I wouldn't expect to hear you say as you eat this is that, that tastes dead. But that would be a very accurate statement. Because everything in this bowl and in this bowl is formerly living organisms. It's dead. Whatever you eat, food, many of you have come to like food. Many of you are here today because you've eaten food a few times. Whatever you eat, regardless of how fresh it is, it's dead. The second you pull a vegetable from a vine or, the branch, you're removing it from its life source. As soon as you do that, it's dead. There's kind of two basic principles when you're eating. If it's alive, don't eat it. If it was never alive, don't eat it. This is why, much to your dismay, in college, the gummy bear Twinkie diet didn't work out. Because there's not enough in those that was ever alive. It's just full of fake stuff. The idea, fundamental to how this works, is that one thing must give itself so that something else can live. One thing must die to provide life for something else. I mean, this is the fabric of the universe. This is just how things work. That one thing must give itself for another to be. It's fundamental to how the universe works. Everything from the food chain to the ecosystem to manure as fertilizer to a woman's womb. That one thing must give itself or give from itself for the benefit of something else to live and to have and to be. It's just how things work. So it also works in the intangible sense. Many of us watched a few weeks ago as tornadoes ripped through Alabama. And there was one school that got destroyed, and there were some students killed. And there was all kinds of stories that came out of that, but this A.J. Jackson is one of the stories you heard. As the roof of the school falls, A.J. is able to lift it up enough so his friend Brittany could crawl out underneath. And then his strength ran out, and it fell on him and killed him. And she lived. And so at the funeral, he and some other students with similar stories, they're called heroes. You know why? They are. That's the definition of heroism. That's it. After 9/11, hundreds of people got the title hero affixed to their names. Firefighters, policemen, To this day, you say, let's roll. And what do you think of? You think of people choosing to fly a plane into the dirt because that was the better of the two options. Just unimaginable decision making. It's heroism. That's what we call it. They're heroes. That's the definition. Everyday people who give themselves so that others can be and have and live. Our top respect, our top honors go to people who put their lives on the line, who risk their lives, who give their lives. Now, check this out. When we hear these stories, what words do we use to describe those stories? We say, that is inspiring. That story inspires me. The word inspire, the word spire in there means spirit. That inspirits me. It breathes life into me. Now, when you die, you expire. So when somebody expires for the sake of someone's spire, it inspires people. Isn't that interesting? That even in intangible ways, we can just hear the story and see the story, and on some fundamental level, it breathes life into us. It's like something comes awake inside of us. In the middle of something that's just disgusting and ugly, wait a minute, it's beautiful. And we would all agree. I have never been to a funeral where the deceased wasn't spoken of by others as a giver, generous, selfless. Where at least at one moment in this person's life that happened. I'm not saying it's never happened. I'm just saying I've never been to a funeral where those words were not used. Why is that? Why do those things get highlighted? Well, because we have this sense in us that if I'm going to encapsulate the story of your life in a paragraph, I'm going to point to the moments where you turned the arrows away from yourself. Because I know intuitively that's when your life had the most meaning. So we see it and we point at it and we stand in awe of it. We memorialize it. We set anniversaries by it. We reward it. We talk about it because it resonates deeply within us that that's just real. That's just the way it's supposed to be. That's why I think in the middle of a lot of garbage on TV, shows like Oprah and Extreme Home Makeover, they're always going to be hits. I talk to grown men, tough guys who, you know, they watch Oprah build a school in South Africa and they curl up in the fetal position on the floor, bawling their eyes out. This is so beautiful. Because it is. It inspires everybody. It makes everybody say, man, I want to be part of that because there's something just deeply real about that. That's the way life is supposed to be. And so we come alive, we wake up, we're inspired when someone empties themselves so somebody else can live and have and be. Selfishness, that's common. You'll be out of this building 15 minutes and you'll run into selfishness. Somebody obsessed with themselves, somebody in self-preservation mode somehow. We see that all the time. And it's almost like an animal instinct. We see it all the time. All the bad guys in the movies, they're the selfish ones, you know, Scrooge and Grinch and those kinds of people. They're the people who are obsessed with their own way at the expense of other people. But everybody would say the pinnacle of humanity is when they decide in their lives in a moment or in a season that somebody else's life, somebody else's interest, that's the goal of their life, when they turn the arrows away from themselves towards other people. Now, I think this is true for all humans, regardless of religious affiliation or lack of religious affiliation. I think all people recognize generosity, charity, giving, selflessness. Regardless of what their worldview is, everybody wants in themselves to be more selfless because we recognize that's where the higher planes are. If I'm going to achieve and be more than I am, part of that's going to be self-denial and selflessness and giving myself to things. All people think that. And you know why? It's because we all need salsa. The salsa speaks to us. Because there's a fundamental thing in the universe that it's true. It doesn't need a religious bracket put around it at all. It's just, we just know it's true. And so all people recognize that. And it comes out. We see glimpses of it all over the place. And we honor it. We lift it up. That something, if it's going to live, something else is going to have to die. So I want to dive into this third part of John 3:16, this third week, that God so loved the world that he gave. He gave his one and only Son that whoever believes in him shall not perish, but have eternal life. Now, here's the question. If God is going to provide life, if he's going to give life, what has to come first? What has to come first? Death. I was like, don't make me mix salsa again. Death. Yes. Death. If God is going to make it so that something can live, first something has to die. Is this a religious thing? No. This is how everything works. Absolutely. So it's the center of the universe. And so guess what? It's the center of faith in God. It's the center of Christianity. It's the center of Judaism, of which Christianity is originally it's part of. That a death brings life. That's why the early Christian writers of the New Testament, they had this in the center of their brain. Romans 5:6, Paul writes to the first church in Rome. He says, you see, at just the right time, when we were still powerless, Christ died for the ungodly. Romans 5:8, two verses later. But God demonstrates his own love for us and this. While we were still sinners, while we're still broken, while we're still waist deep in all the junk we've broken and ruined, Christ died for us. 1 Corinthians 15:3, Paul again to the church in Corinth. For what I received, I passed on to you as of first importance, that Christ died for our sins, for everything we'd messed up, according to the scriptures. In other words, just like they said he would. 1 Thessalonians 5:10, writing to the church in Thessalonica, he says, he, Jesus, died for us so that we may live together with him. He died, we live. So there's this universal truth in the salsa, in food, and a kid giving his life in a tornado, to Jack giving Rose the floating door on the icy waters where the Titanic just went down, and we're like, oh, yes. It inspires us. It comes to life in us to the extent that it's like we're already wired to recognize what Jesus did. The cross is not a new idea. God just did what he designed everything to do, to provide life through a death. So, at the risk of sounding a little arrogant, the cross is not our thing that's better than other religions, their thing. And so our goal is not to, let me see if I can talk you into believing this concept that we think is better than yours, and let's start arguing and giving you all the. No, that's the cross. Everybody already recognizes that's how it would work, because that's how everything works. It doesn't, not through a chant or a spell or some meditative state. No, through a death. Of course. Before I became a follower of Jesus, every once in a while people would, you know, I'd have encounters with Christians, and a couple times people would try to share with me their faith, or I saw them share their faith with somebody else that I was running around with. And you get to the part of the cross, and it's like, start telling me that there's this historical event that's kind of isolated, this weird thing where this man, this Jewish man, died for my sins. And maybe sins that you're not entirely aware of, but if you don't just accept this in your brain, this isolated, strange event, if you just don't wrap your brain around it, well, then even bigger problems are coming. What? Or maybe when you've shared your faith with somebody, or somebody's asked you a question, and you're like, okay, here's why, you know, I follow this Jesus. And you start talking, and you realize about 5 minutes into it that I think I'm in over my head. I don't know what I'm saying here. This is really feels detached from reality. I mean, some of you, you've had moments where you're sharing this stuff, and you're rattling off scriptures and doing whatever. And as it's coming out, you're thinking, this sounds weird. This sounds very strange. And some of you just decided, I'm not going to open my mouth about that anymore. I'm just not. I'll go to church, but I'm not going to tell people why. Because it's detached. Or maybe you were sharing your faith with somebody one time, and they asked a question. And they said, after you were done with whatever presentation you'd made, okay, that's great, but if God can do anything, why didn't he just forgive us? I mean, why do I have to believe the cross and all that? And so you responded by sputtering out some sentence fragments, and then you went, Jesus, look, and went and hid. But see, what we have to embrace is that the universe functions on on the concept of Jesus dying on the cross. That's how everything already works. So how about when we're talking about trying to share our faith with somebody, if you know they ask you about it and you want to say this is the story of Jesus, why don't we just start with the premise of how everything works, the God's design? Why don't we just start there? I mean, when we talk about God giving his son, well, we can just look at the universe and say that's just how everything works. Every time God does something, he's a giver. It's not like we can pay him back. He's not making a deal with us. He is a giver. Everything he's designed and everything he does is based on this idea that he gives. It's his nature. God so loved the world that he gave. And so maybe the question is, has anyone ever sacrificed for you? Done something for you? And did it move you? Why? Why was that significant to you? Have you ever had this really big need and somebody just came through and it's like that they had no expectation for you to pay them back. It was just, they just gave it to you. Did that move you? Was that important to you? Why? What in you found that moving? This is not a religious conversation at all. Let's just observe how the universe works and how people respond to it. And let's just talk about that for a little while. When you're moved by firefighters dying in the World Trade Center, when you're moved by a kid holding a roof up for a moment more, but not for himself, are you moved by the firefighter and the boy, or are you being moved, even though you don't know anything about it, by the gospel? Is the gospel still true, still rippling through time, and we're seeing it in all these different ways, like God saying, yeah, this concept has always been true and always will be? What if that's what's moving us? Or what if rather than getting into these conversations and talking about these things, what if we stopped using so many words? And what if we just simply lived out, he gave? What if we just did that? Because we've already decided people are inspired by one thing giving itself so something else can be. So what if we just stopped arguing and talking and trying to convince people with our intellect? I'm not saying get rid of it. Just what if our emphasis was, well, he gave, and so I do, because that's how reality works. I mean, when God gave Jesus to die sacrificially for us, was it some new, crazy, out-of-nowhere idea, or was it something we already knew how to recognize and be inspired by? In other words, to be a Jesus follower, do I have to be able to comprehend and accept this very strange, isolated concept? Or is the requirement that I simply enjoy salsa? Yeah, I eat. I get it. See, I've centered my life around this idea that Jesus did not come to set something new in place. He did not come to institute a new religion. He didn't. I think what Jesus came to do is he came to dial us into a reality that had already existed. See, Jesus came to say, I've come to give you life and give it to you abundantly. I want you to live and I want life to flow through you for other people. He said, that's what I came to do. Another place he says, I am the way and the truth and the life. I don't just teach it. I am the way and the truth and the life. And what we need to understand is Jesus is not saying, hey, I'm putting together a system here that's superior to every other code of conduct. That's not what he's saying. What he's saying is, my life is the only one that taps into reality. My life is the only one that's in alignment with God's will, God's design. So if you want to know something about reality, if you want to be with God, apart from all the religious clutter maybe somebody put around you, if you want to connect with God, you're going to have to trust me and listen to me, because my life is the only one that reflects how things really are. So we think about, I'm going to follow Jesus and become a Christian, and it's like, I got to go get into a box. And Jesus says, no, I'm inviting you into the world, because this is how things are. Following Jesus is simply patterning life the way it was meant to be lived. So let's ask how this goes beyond information. This has to be more than information, or we're just talking again. So if you've got a Bible with you, turn to the third book of the New Testament, Luke. Chapter 9. And we'll be in Luke 9, verse 23. Jesus says this to his followers. And it's pretty interesting, pretty challenging. Then he, Jesus, said to them all, this whole group of people as they're standing around, If anyone would come after me, would follow me, he must deny himself and take up his cross daily and follow me. Now, if you take this literally, you can only do this once. Jesus is painting a picture, isn't he? We get that. You take up your cross every day. It's a picture. All right? So Jesus says, if anyone would come after me, he must deny himself and take up his cross daily and follow me. It's a decision you make every day. For whoever wants to save his life will lose it. But whoever loses his life for me, for my agenda, for what I'm interested in, Jesus is saying, will save it. That's deep. That's deep. That'll mess with your head. You just keep reading that and go, holy cow. Jesus is saying in order to find life, you have to begin to embrace this principle of death. And most people in our culture, they go, oh, I don't want to do that. That doesn't sound like any fun. But see, you're already inspired by this concept that runs behind the fabric of the universe. You already would love to be somebody honored as a giver, as generous. And so you do want this. And Jesus says, if you want this, the way that you do it is you point all the arrows away from yourself, take up your cross every day, and be consumed with the things of God, which always has in it loving people. One time, Jesus was asked, Jesus, out of all these commandments, there's 613 in the Old Testament commands. Of all of them, which is the most important one? This is a very popular question in the first century for a Jewish rabbi to be asked. And Jesus answers this way in Matthew 22. He says, love the Lord your God with all your heart and with all your soul and with all your mind. This is the first and greatest commandment. And the second is like it. Love your neighbor as yourself. All the law and prophets, which is Jesus' way of saying the whole Bible, hang on these two. 613, it boils down to everything God has told people to do, told them to be, and dreamt. It boils down to this. Love God with everything you got. Love his way. And love people the way you naturally demand to be loved. Give people attention the way that you want to be given attention. It's like the whole Bible conditions us for selflessness. Conditions us for reality. And so maybe, I don't know if you've ever had this thought before, but maybe God isn't a megalomaniac. I mean, maybe you've noticed that as you read through the Old Testament. Worship me, listen to me, pray to me, lift up my name, do it for my glory. All this me, me, me of God. You're like, God, if you're supposed to be selfless, then why'd you write a book about yourself? Maybe what God is doing is always giving us someone else to think about. So even if we were alone, we can be selfless. Maybe God is conditioning in us this reality that it's not all about me. I love what the author, John Andrew Holmes, said. I think he nailed it. He said, it is well to remember that the entire universe, with one trifling exception, is made up of others. I think that's the message of the Bible. Hey, there's a universe out there, and most of it is made of not you. Love the Lord your God with all your everything and love people the way you naturally would love to be loved. That is how you will be patterned after reality. Now, these first two commandments being lived out, I don't know what flavor of Christianity you grew up in or around, but we don't see that so much. It seems to be rare. Most people would define a Christian as something other than selfless, a giver, a good listener, somebody that gives themselves. It's become, here's what we believe, and here's what we hold other people to, and we stand up for that. For a large part, that's what people who don't have any interest in Christianity, that's how they feel. But Jesus says, if you're going to follow me, people will be identifying you following me by your love, by the way that you pattern the Father that gave. You'll be fellow world menders, life menders. People will see that as the mark of Jesus. Why? Because God creates life through death, and God gave us life through the death of Jesus. And now God brings life to other people through our death. And so here's the challenge as we leave here today. You should have a war in your head when you leave here. Maybe it's already started. Because there's this big part of you that says, this is what I want. with all the trappings and confusion and stuff that's kind of cluttered around faith, this is what I want. I would love to grow in generosity, in giving, and selflessness. I would love to naturally give preference to other people, even when they're treating me poorly. I would just love them to the extent that I don't demand they treat me well. I just want to be that person. But there's this other side of you that is freaking out and says, do you know what this will do to the course of your life, to your comfort, to your plans? If you don't worry about you, who will? The challenge is, what do you do with that war? Trusting Jesus has become this fluffy, up in the clouds kind of thing. Like you just, there's this past Jesus and there's these ideas and I just believe it and that's what it means to trust Jesus. No, trusting Jesus, what you're trusting is that 2,000 years ago, he gave. And then you pattern your life after that example. That you take up your cross and carry it into work tomorrow. And carry it to dinner tonight. And carry it into difficult relationships that require one of you has got to die. That's trusting Jesus because it's difficult and you've got to think, man, if I really trust this way, if I really trust the deepest reality, I'm going to have to die. So ask yourself the question, where are you refusing to die? Where have you refusing to take up your cross? You've put it down. Maybe you always have to be right. Maybe you work really, really hard. You go to great lengths to prove yourself. You know what you're doing? You're refusing to die. Maybe it's very difficult for you to apologize. You don't want to apologize because you've learned in your head somewhere that you must be victorious. If you apologize, that's a weakness and you can't do that. But you know when someone apologizes to you and they mean it, it changes everything in a second. It's like you drop your guard and it's like you just breathe life back into the relationship. So when you're not apologizing, what you're doing is you're refusing to die. And Jesus says, no, you need to die. You need to die there and watch life come back to your relationship. Many of you have come to understand that marriages don't work unless both parties die. If they don't, you have two individuals that are fighting to remain an individual, that are in self-protection mode all the time. A relationship is that's the grounds in which both parties have to die to come together and make this beautiful thing called marriage come to life. It's true in really all relationships that to make them work, you're going to have to die. The loneliest people we see are the people who are only consumed with their own interests. It's true that we have to die in relationships because it's true in the ecosystem. It's just how everything works. And so maybe you've never taken a step of faith, or maybe you would call yourself Christian, but you're just kind of flatlining lately. It's like, yeah, it's, what is the point? This really doesn't have any bearing on reality, you know? And so you feel like your faith is, eh. Well, maybe for you, you know enough now. I mean, maybe you've heard somebody say, I want to go deep. And when they say that, typically what they mean is, I want to hear more information. I want to learn more stuff. And all I'm telling you is that has value, but your faith will cap off. There comes a point where you got to take up your cross and deny yourself and die. And I'm realizing later when you tell people, you know, hey, how was church this morning? He told me I had to die. So, do you want to come to my church? We have to get past ideas and we have to actually follow Jesus. Jesus didn't just say, study me. He said, follow me. Take up your cross and go put on display a God that gave. Point the arrows away from you. If you really want to live, you're going to have to die. If you really want to understand life, you have to die. So where in your life do you need to join God in dying? I mean, be specific. Look at your finances. What do they represent? And if you think this is a giving sermon, you can unpucker. That's not what this is, all right? Look at your checkbook. Look at what you spend and look at what you invest in. And just simply ask yourself the question, does this reflect my self-preservation, me trying to secure for myself my own universe at the expense of other things? Or am I partnered with a God that understands I can trust him and I gotta die in this way too? Look at your calendar. Look at your plans. Does your calendar reflect a desire to take up your cross and give yourself to people? Or is it just your own universe that just keeps getting planned? Just ask yourself the question, where am I trying to save the course of my own life? Because those areas that you find, those are areas that you do not follow Jesus, because you will not die. Is there anything that you need to die to so that you can live? We're gonna celebrate communion, and we're gonna have the worship team come back out here, and we do celebrate it. It's something to celebrate, because communion is like this picture that God left us. He says, I want you to know what it looks like when I give myself away. It looks like Jesus. And so to memorialize both what he did and what we're supposed to be if we pattern our life after who he is, then it has everything to do with death. We have to remember that. We proclaim that death. We proclaim and celebrate the ultimate give. And it's interesting that it was done in a way that we were made to recognize. Jesus said in John 6:51, I am the living bread that came down from heaven. If anyone eats of this bread, he will live forever. This bread is my flesh, which I will give for the life of the world. Jesus gives our souls what food gives our bodies, life from death. And then he says, if you're going to follow me, you got to live by this pattern. This is what I set out to do, to tap into a reality that already exists, that the only way this is going to work is if we're people that take up our cross and give ourselves, give our intentions and give our resources and give our plans to God and his agenda, which is people. So we're going to celebrate communion this morning, and we're going to sing a song as we do it. There's a couple of stations up at the front, and there's one in the back. And what I'd like for you to do is come and receive from God this bread of life, this picture of what it means when God gives. So I just want to ask you to come up here and take the bread and dip it in the juice. This represents Christ's broken body and his spilled blood. And as you take it, as you celebrate, and as you worship and think about, oh my goodness, this is the ultimate gift. I can't pay back this gift. That's the kind of giver God is. As you take this, just hear your King say, I gave. I give. I forgive. And then, let God tell you what it means to walk out of this building as his follower. Because if you're a follower of Jesus, he says, you are my body. You are the body of Christ. And as he gives his body, we go out and he gives his body to the world. We honor the King when we take his death out there and put it on display for people to see. For a people who desperately need to eat. Let's pray. God, you have given us forgiveness. You have given us your Spirit. You have given and given and given and given. And the way that you give, it challenges us, because you give things that can't be paid back. You give in ways that we just don't see anyone ever give. But you've wired the world to work in such a way that we see glimpses of this all the time, and we want more of it, and we see it culminate in your Son. So God, as we take this bread that represents a broken and given body, and this juice that represents spilled, given blood, may it not only remind us that our sins are forgiven, but that we have been given a pattern, and that following you has everything to do with going out into this world and dying for it. To go into our homes, our marriages, our work, our school, and to die in it so that others can have and live and be. Thank you for sending your Son. if you lost your job, what doesn't happen in your office anymore? If you move off your street, what no longer happens? What do the people grieve about? Oh, the Christian left, and so there isn't. That's what's so great about being part of this community, is that we're trying to be this people that, as morbid as it sounds, if we weren't here, people would notice, because it would leave something missing in this community. It would leave something missing in the world. There wouldn't be people dying so that others could live. My prayer is that you take this message of death and go proclaim it. Go live it. Go do it. And when necessary, use words. And I have a feeling that a lot of Mexican restaurants will be a little more full today. Love them well. As always, there'll be some leaders, some staff people, some elders up front. If you need to pray about something, talk about something, you're more than welcome. Just come talk to us about that. Next week, we'll talk about God's one and only Son. What does Son of God mean? We'll explore that. Have a great week. We love you guys.